For almost 2,000 years, the Catholic Church has pointed the way toward salvation through Jesus Christ. For each of us, that journey starts in darkness, as if in a cave. We invite you now to come with us as we seek wisdom and truth by way of faith and reason with your guides, Mark Tuttle and Timothy O'Donnell. Join us in the Catholic Cave. Welcome once again to the Catholic Cave. I'm Kent Blanford. In the cave with me, two of the most intelligent cave dwellers you're ever going to meet, Mr. Timothy O'Donnell and Mr. Mark Tuttle. Gentlemen, we dusted off the rocks. We brought out the doilies because we have a guest in the studio today.
Doilies?
Doilies. Yeah,
I didn't even know we had any doilies.
I'm not even sure what a doily is.
Where's the napkins?
They were tucked away in the drawer, and I had to move the chicken bones to get to them. But yes, I found them. We have in the studio, Dr. Gwen Adams comes back. Welcome back.
Thank you. Nice to be back.
The talk these days is community. What does a Catholic community look like? And, you know, one of the books that's out there is The Benedict Option. What is The Benedict Option? Is it truly an option, or, you know, is it the way to go?
Yeah, The Benedict Option is one of those hot topic books that's, you know, I think everybody's talking about and has read, and everybody seems to have an opinion on this one way or the other.
Whether even if you haven't read it.
Exactly. I was going to say whether you've read it or not.
Right.
So it's written by Rod Dreher, who's a journalist. He used to work for the Dallas Morning News. He has written for National Review. A lot of the prominent kind of conservative publications. And I think knowing where he came from, a little bit of what his initial roots helps place The Benedict Option. He really made a name for himself with a book called Crunchy Cons,
right,
where he was calling for kind of a new breed of conservatism that brought together, I think, the instinct to kind of conserve and preserve the American way of life is probably the best way to put it. But that involves then a lot of things that are now considered left-wing causes. So,
oops.
Well, no, I don't think an oops at all. No,
think things just moved.
Environmental conservationism, for instance, is one of his big things. That this is actually a conservative cause. This is not something that should be a liberal cause. Conservation is something that that really, honestly, is part of the right side of the spectrum. Community development, like housing, and the way cities are laid out, urban planning, etc.
Right.
Conserving the American town and the American city and the traditional way that America looks, that's something that should engage conservatives and not liberals. Food and food production, where our food comes from, our farming life, organic food, and that's really where the name of the book comes from. You know, he was part of a co-op in New York where he lived, and got made merciless fun of for it, because I think he was working for the National Review at the time, and so exactly, and they're like, what are you doing going to an organic co-op? You're supposed to be a conservative. So that's kind of where he comes from. And because of that, he's always been this almost kind of countercultural conservative. Well, in The Benedict Option, he takes that counterculturalism probably about three steps further and says, look, the mainstream culture has gotten so bad and is so toxic to Christianity right now, and we've allowed our communities to get so depleted that there's nothing left to conserve. There's nothing left there to preserve. So we need to basically take a strategic withdrawal for a little bit and work on building up our communities, work on building up our institutions that used to contribute to a vibrant Christian America. And try to, and not so much rebuild, because I'm not sure it's really a call to go back to the past, but it's a call to look at education, to look at those sort of community institutions that have gone by the wayside, and as Christians, deliberately engage there rather than in politics, national politics, the places where I think conservatives have politically position themselves and Christians have kind of aligned themselves. He's saying we need to step back from traditional politics and really go back to Aristotelian politics, the idea of community building, up from family on up to create Christian communities again.
Mm-hmm. And that's this appeal to people from a lot of different backgrounds, people who are interested in intentional Christian or Catholic communities sort of in new forms, but also to people who were already interested in parish communities. So there's kind of tension between, is the parish still a good model for community? It's certainly the canonical structural model, but the idea of, can a parish community regain more relational aspect, the kind of thing that Dreher's talking about? Can it be a place where Christian culture can thrive and children can be formed?
You know, I'm not sure the parish has ever played the role of being the complete community builder. It's interesting. Other social movements have been built around the idea that there's a sort of a central organization, but then other organizations sort of float around the outside of them. And so there's a connection of lots of different institutions and lots of different activities and things, but they all kind of float around a central institution that's not them. And that's always sort of seemed to me the model of parish life is the parish provides that central institution, but our work lives, our vocations, our lives out in the world, even to a certain extent education, although the parishes took a large responsibility for education with parish schools, those occur kind of on the periphery of parish life, and parish life is pretty much there, not as sacrament factories. I think that's the I think that's the derogatory stereotype.
I've not heard that term.
No, but
sacrament factories. Good Lord.
But more as places where we worship together, and that's where we receive the sacraments.
Mm-hmm. I would qualify. Well, I guess I agree with you. I'd say. There's some evidence in the earlier part of the 20th century, parishes in 1910 and up really 1900 to 1930, where they were kind of the center of a hub of different activities, but they were the center of people's communal lives. So they did have other spheres of community, but the parish was where their friends were. And whatever we have now, I don't know if that's true for a lot of people. They are finding their friends at work or school, but the parish is not.
Social media.
Yes.
Social media. To a certain extent.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I
wonder, too, if I appreciate you pointing out that time period, Dr. Adams. The it seems, 100 years ago, we were, as Americans, we were probably more planted in the. People didn't wander very far from the place they were born, I guess, generally, maybe 100 years ago, right? And it's really, that was one of the phenomenons of the First World War, where you actually begin to have large number of people that are actually kind of migrating or moving or having experiences overseas and things like that. So I wonder, in today's day and age, it seems like most people are from somewhere else, no matter where you go in the country, right? There's tremendous amount of relocation. People don't live near their siblings, generally speaking. They don't live like down the street. That's the rare exception, right? Most of us have siblings all over the country and parents in other cities and blah, blah, children elsewhere, things like that. So I wonder how that dynamic affects our ability to have that kind of same kind of parish life when the parish you grow up in, you as a young adult are just as likely to move away from in pursuit of your, career or other vocation or what have you.
Right. Well, we've always been a pretty mobile nation, just being a nation of immigration. But it is true that so the high point of domestic stability, people still living in the state where they were born, is 1900 to 1930.
Okay.
But that percentage is still something like 70% of people in America. So
really?
So
still?
No, 1900 and 1930.
Oh, okay.
That's the high point. So
at 70%.
70%. So 30% of Americans are still don't live there anymore. Yeah. So that's the highest we've ever had stability. So is it really connected to the same time where the parishes were also the most strong communally? I don't know, but it is the same time period, which is interesting to, it'd be worth investigating.
Right, and you know, just going off of impressions from history books, et cetera, you know, I think the big difference between then and now is when people move from place to place, they really were able to move from community to community.
That's
so
true.
you were able to move from one place that had institutions, that, that had an institutional life, that, that, that people knew each other and friendships were already formed, and move into that and adapt to that. And now I think it's more the pace with which people are moving from place to place that, you know, those communities just aren't there. So when you move to one place, there's nothing to kind of assimilate to. It's pretty much everybody there in the same boat. And, you know, I wonder also, you know, when you move from place to place, I'm not sure it was quite so economically motivated as it is now. Or at least temporarily economically motivated, you know. And I think there's a lot to be said for one of our problems is we've allowed economics to become kind of the driving force of our lives and our society, and that's what we focus on. So, you know, nobody moves to be able to go to a different parish. You know,
it's like a factor at best.
Right. Exactly. Yeah. Right. I mean, you may drive a little bit more on a Sunday morning to go to the parish you want to go to. But nobody moves from one city to another because they've heard of this great, you know, and, you know, I take that back. Actually, I think there are some people that, that they do hear about a thriving, dynamic Catholic community. And so they decide to move there. But that's
the kind of person who buys the Benedict option. Though.
Well,
you know?
That's very true.
Yeah. That's pretty countercultural. So.
Yeah. So how is it that we might begin to think about the term I hear bannered about a lot is thick communities, right? Thick meaning that, you know, there's something very substantial to the community in which one belongs. And I think what we've been describing so far is thin communities, right? Where there's kind of, there's this loose confederation or loose bonds, loose relationships, or thin. So what might be some of the ways in which we might begin to think about how we might form thick Catholic communities. Is it in parish life? Is that where we ought to begin? Is it outside of or alongside of that? Is it one of these? Do we form different institutions? Do we need new institutions that are maybe connected to parish life?
Well, I know everyone's asking this question in different ways. So there's the issue of the nuns, the N-O-N-E-S. So many people are leaving their parish communities, leaving the church in general. There's also the issue of people do move to your parish, and then how do you help them incorporate into the community? And then there's the third issue of recidivism with converts. So people enter the Catholic Church, but they only stay for a few years because they're not that incorporated into the life of the church. So RCIA teams are asking this, faith formators are asking this. In general, everyone's saying, so how do we build that thick Catholic community? But there are a couple of solutions people are throwing out there.
And we'll take a look at those solutions right after we take a break. This is the Catholic Cave on Catholic Radio Indy.
If you're a golfer, you probably know this sound. That's the sound of you teeing off with that shot that you hope just might be a hole-in-one. And you probably know this sound also. That's the sound of your golf ball going into the cup 5 strokes later. It doesn't matter how you golf. If you have fun golfing, you're going to enjoy our Catholic Radio golf outing Tuesday, May 22nd at Plum Creek Golf Club in Carmel. It's a full day with Mass at 11 o'clock, lunch at 11:30, a full afternoon of golf, and a delicious dinner with guest speaker Chris Ballard, General Manager of the Indianapolis Colts. Don't miss it. You can sign up now by calling 317-870-8400 or by going online to CatholicRadioIndy.org. That's 317-870-8400 or CatholicRadioIndy.org.
If it wasn't for you all, I don't know what I would do.
Catholic Radio Indy.
What an absolute blessing you are.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle here with Timothy O'Donnell, and we have in studio in the cave today, we have a special guest, Dr. Gwen Adams, and we are talking about community today. We're talking a little bit about the idea of trying to reinforce and kind of build back up Catholic community. We started off talking a little bit about Rod Dreher and Rod Dreher's book, The Benedict Option, and what the Benedict Option is, which is a call to all of us to concentrate on building up our Christian communities and maybe not so much worrying too much about the culture wars anymore, which, you know, as a pro-life activist, as somebody that's kind of out there, I think fighting the good fight in the broader culture wars, it does raise the question, how are the two connected? You know, and intuitively, I see Rod Dreher's point that the reason we're losing ground on a lot of these big picture culture war issues is because we've lost ground in, you know, kind of the ability to keep control over our own communities, mm-hmm. Where we live, where we go to church, where we have our jobs, where we raise our families. How connected is this sort of breakdown of community with the overall, I think what we see, breakdown of culture at large?
Oh, that's true. I used to, 1 year I was a sidewalk counselor outside an abortion clinic, and I remember that's an incredibly difficult kind of
that
work.
That is. That's
and
very difficult.
You really have to almost have a call to it, I'd say. And I remember thinking, though, that, you know, occasionally when maybe a woman would change her mind, I thought, but then, like, what about the next year or the year after that? Like, what world do they go back to? That's like every day you need to be supported. We don't live in our heads with ideas, you know, trying to push one or another or cleave to the truth. We have to be supported in our daily life by a culture, a community that really helps put flesh on that.
Right. And one of the statistics that stands out is the percentage of abortions are more and more moving to women that are aborting their third or fourth child. In other words, they have two children already.
Wow.
And they've been able to kind of weather the economic storm and the difficulties of life with two kids, whether it's, you know, grandma has stepped in to help mm-hmm. out. But the third kid is seen or perceived as just too much for this family. And yeah, I think that goes back to us not having strong enough communal bonds to be able to step in and help distressed families like that mm-hmm. when they need the help.
Yeah, and I want to maybe pause for a second too. We bring up the Benedict Option, and just one thing I want to reference, just in case people aren't that familiar. So when I hear Benedict, often I think of Pope Benedict, Emeritus 16th.
Mm-hmm.
But that's not the Benedict we're talking about, right? In the Benedict Option, we're talking about the original, right, Saint Benedict, and who is the patron saint of Europe, right? And really credited with being the founder of monasticism, right, at least in the Western tradition. So I wanted to bring that up because when we're talking about the Benedict Option, it is, in my mind, it's important to think about kind of what role monasticism has played in the building up of Western civilization.
And that's not to say that the Benedict Option is a call to all of us to become monks, you know, to withdraw
Correct.
Behind monastery walls.
Monks and nuns, right.
Or even, you know, to create, you know, closed communities where we're, you know, cloistered off from the world to rebuild our families, etc. That's not really the call. The reason Rod Dreher picked St. Benedict is because he saw St. Benedict as an instrument to preserve Western culture through the Dark Ages. So the foundation of the monasteries was the foundation of an institution that helped to keep the Enlightenment as Benedict saw it and as other people saw it, that it had come from the Roman Empire, mainly Christianity, to keep that alive in the face of the onslaught of those Germanic hordes who are happen to be mm-hmm. my ancestors.
yeah.
That explains a lot.
Exactly. That's why you're back in the cave.
Right. Yeah.
It's also just that Dreher's just really good at coining provocative rhetorical terms. Mm-hmm. And since then, I've seen, I think I've seen at least 10 other versions. The Dominic option.
The Marian option.
I know. Yeah. What exactly is the right model that we're looking for, the way to build a community which is formative in all the best ways?
Yeah, but I think all of them agree. All of the people agree that we need to rebuild the communities. Mm-hmm. You know, Catholic community in particular is languishing. And I think it manifests itself most when somebody moves into a new parish, mm-hmm. and they have a hard time assimilating. They have a hard time making friends. They have a hard time getting involved in the parish because it's a weird dichotomy. On the one hand, the parish seems to have a life of its own, so you almost get this feeling like, well, I'm not needed here. But on the other hand, you feel like there's a lack of activity to engage with.
Mm-hmm. Or too much activity. So this is something I've been talking about with a friend recently. So I was a youth minister years ago, and I did what many people who work for parishes or dioceses do, which is create rich activities, and that's
lots of them.
Yeah, lots of them, and that's a theme for another show. I think it's mm-hmm. important to give experiences of the faith, mm-hmm. but I did not do anything much to create communal relationships. I thought those would just sort of happen
through out of the activities.
Yeah,
right?
But yeah. It does seem that maybe not. I've been really intrigued mm-hmm. by some of the movements or ideas I've seen recently. So I talked to some of the leaders of the Frassati Society locally, and they intentionally don't do a lot of activities. They spend their time trying to create the forums for people to cultivate relationships. And I also heard Eric Gallagher, who works for the Diocese of Sioux Falls, I heard him give a whole day-long workshop about discipleship-based ministry. And his idea, I just thought this was shocking, was you know, fire your directors of faith formation, fire your youth ministers. I know.
Yeah,
and what you need is dads, moms, adults getting together and just forming relationships, not activities, not programs. I thought,
what would that look like though? What's the difference between, because I guess my experience is through activities. So I'd see an activity and I'd say, oh, that looks kind of interesting. So I'd sign up for it, right? Mm-hmm. Or help put it on. And then I'd meet people. But you're right, kind of when the activity ends, then we kind of go our separate ways. So what would be different in a relational kind of setting versus, say, an activity? I don't know, right? I mean, I don't know because
it boggles my mind. Yeah.
Right.
Well, you know, just from my own experience, where I've been able to develop friendships have been in being involved in, I think, the more mundane parish life. So as a faith formation catechist.
Okay.
Yeah, I've made friendships with the other catechists. You know, I think the retreats also that go on, you know, whether it's Christ Renews His Parish, you know, mm-hmm. Acts Retreat, other things like that. The more vibrant parishes, they've been able to have people form relationships through those retreats that then continue. And relationships.
Curcio.
But the relationships that don't just involve individuals, but they're able to involve entire families. So, and you know, I'm not sure you can't program that. You can't orchestrate that and pull the strings and say, we need to bring these families together to form friendships. But I think it's more those types of activities that allow those friendships to kind of bloom and blossom.
I think one of the challenges that we're facing to building these thick Catholic communities, to me, just seems to be the time constraints. It just seems that all of us are constantly on the move, you know, from 5 a.m., right, when the alarm goes off, we're in this kind of, you know, hurry-up mode to prepare ourselves to leave our homes to go to work or whatever commitments that we have, and then we make our way through the day and with kids at school or daycare, what have you, mm-hmm. and we put in 8, 9, 10 hours later, then it's you know, sort of the family kind of reassembles, you know, for afternoon activities like sports and ballet and other things, and then that's going to carry us into dinner, where we're going to take 30 minutes to eat, you know, some Stouffer's, and then we're going to move right into homework mode, and then we're going to go to, we're going to crash out, you know, we're going to crash and then get up and start again. And so we're, it's hard to see where there's time in that, because those are, that's sort of the, right. the routine that seems most of us have. Where are we going to fit in?
A 7 p.m. Bible study.
Correct. Like, yeah. What? Yeah. The activity or yeah. relational or just, yeah. Yeah, yeah, whatever it is, or just mm-hmm. a coffee clutch, you know. So you wind up, you have to almost displace some of that somewhere along the lines in order to make this happen. And that seems really, really challenging to me.
And mm-hmm. all of those activities that you just mentioned, none of those really allow a kind of focused institutional relationship building. You know, so we're kind of hopping from activity to activity to activity that we're all really more or less disconnected from right. in a lot of ways. I mean, yes, you've got the camaraderie of a soccer team, but quite honestly, that's its own little sphere and mm-hmm. it's for a limited amount of time and it's not really an institution. It's a team. Mm-hmm. You know, and same thing with, you know, fine arts. If your kids are involved in ballet or music or whatever, once again, you know, our activities, you know, our lives revolve around kind of bouncing from activity to activity to activity to activity, which, if you're lucky, involves church as just one of your many activities. Mm-hmm. You know, I think for a lot of people, they don't even really have time for church to be an activity.
Right. That's, oh gosh, we could go down that path. That's really hard on people psychologically. There was a sociological book, Habits of the Heart, that came out maybe 3 decades ago about how modern Americans live in 3, 4, or 5 different communities with no, that are disconnected, and it's really difficult for your emotional life to try to make sense of what is my life, because there's no unity. You're just just moving to the new world all day long. So
right, and I what I've seen with families in parish life mm-hmm. is with you know, raising children is and the parishes I've been involved in have not had parochial schools.
Okay.
So they're the one. So these are families that are by and large, not exclusively, but by and large are again going, you know, belong to a parish. They're showing up on Sunday for Mass, religious ed, but then, you know, during the week they're plugged into public schools. Good mm-hmm. good public school, mm-hmm. but public schools, and increasingly with public schools they are encroaching more and more on Sundays. So your kids are getting involved. Kids are getting involved in different organizations, sports, for example, where more and more of our culture, our society, do not have a reverence for Sunday. And so mm-hmm. they are on travel teams, or they're just simply beginning to schedule the soccer matches for 8 a.m. Sunday morning.
Mm-hmm.
And and there's enough parents, there's enough people who are not practicing, certainly the Catholic faith, but don't have the same level of commitment or obligation to go to church on Sunday, that now these schedules are beginning to increasingly override even what we would mm-hmm. normally have set aside as Sunday is the day for worshiping. It's the Lord's Day, right? Well, with that, we're going to need to take a quick break. You're listening to The Catholic Cave with our special guest, Dr. Gwen Adams. Stay tuned. We're talking about how we might approach building thick Catholic communities. Stay tuned.
Think of all the media our young people are exposed to today. MTV, movies, what passes for entertainment on TV, song lyrics that are questionable or worse. Where do they hear the message that it's okay to be chaste and modest? Or that it's not crazy to practice their faith, or to believe in a God who loves them and can forgive them no matter what they do? Catholic Radio is the answer. Be sure to tell your friends and relatives about Catholic Radio Indy.
Listening to this radio was really like the jump start of me getting to know Jesus.
This is the station that led me to Christ.
Catholic Radio Indy.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm Mark Tuttle, here with Timothy O'Donnell, Dr. Gwen Adams, and we are talking about building up community. And so far, we've been talking about a lot of the obstacles, mm-hmm. a lot of the problems and difficulties, and kind of what's caused some of communal life to deteriorate, not only within our parishes, but, you know, in American society in general. So on the more positive side, what are some trends? What are some things that are going on that are kind of helping us pull us back together, helping us rebuild some of these communities? Maybe not to the point that we could call them thick Catholic communities, but nonetheless, you know, an attempt to rebuild and bring us all back to parish life from the ground up.
Yeah, I had two ideas. One, which I think is easy to, well, not easy, but is replicable, one we could do in our own communities. And another one that I just came up in a conversation with the with a friend recently. So let me tell the
we're going to smoke out who this quote-unquote friend is before we're done with the show.
You've got to have her on
the
show.
I've got some ideas.
She's got some experience, too. So the first idea is kind of, so based on the, spinning off of Rod Dreher's book, also Archbishop Chaput's Strangers in a Strange Land.
Great book.
I have been working on a book which is scheduled to come out in the fall and will be, it's basically answering the idea, so we need to build Catholic community. And my book is saying, for the last 40 years, there have been people building really amazing forms of community in different venues around the country and to tell their stories. And all the communities are doing things and building community in ways that you could copy in your own town. So,
well, that is good news.
Yeah, it is. So there's a group of people in San Diego who are running a ministry for victims of human trafficking, and they have an amazing model which really needs to be imitated in other places. I'm interviewing a women's care center. We need more of those around the country. And our conversation reminded me of a school that I interviewed in Maryland called St. Jerome's, and they had this problem that the parish was completely divorced from the life of the school. So two different worlds.
Right.
I've heard of that happening. Yeah.
So what happened in a kind of at the time, it was a huge problem, is their school almost had to close, as did some other schools, for financial reasons. And so they were told, if you cannot get it together in such and such amount of time, you're going to have to lose your school. And they had to have meetings with everybody who's possibly connected, with donors, with parents, and they also had to have a meeting with the parish. And there were all these families at the parish who did not send their children to the school, but realized we could if the school was something that served our children, or we saw it as something that served our children instead of just this building that's nearby. And so they had a huge amount of input into the direction the school would take in its curriculum and just its whole life. And it brought both those worlds together in a really beautiful way, which we would all love to see, instead of having these two worlds that kind of, you know, coexist. But so so that is a really interesting example of how to build community by an active effort to involve all the people who could be members of the community, instead of sort of just being okay with the status quo of living side by side.
Right. And I'll play devil's advocate. You know, if I went to my parish priest and kind of threw out some of those ideas, said, you know what, we need to build a bigger, more vibrant outreach to, you know, the victims of sex trafficking, or we need to really get behind and our parish needs to adopt one of these pregnancy resource centers, he would laugh. And he would point to the million things that the parish is doing to reach out to the community and say, we do all of this, where are we going to have time to carve out even more time for something that now you want to not only, you know, do one more thing, but you want to make it like the mainstay of our parish community.
Yeah. Most of these stories that I'm telling are precipitated by crises or problems, which is kind of, you know, nobody wants that, but they're sort of, they come to a point where they say, what we're doing is not working and we need something else.
There's a tipping point, right?
Yeah. So for many communities still, like if you go to your parish priest, they say, you know, what we're doing is not, where's the crisis? It would be nice, but that sounds really extra. So sometimes it comes, it has to come from saying, you know, finding yourself closer to Rod Dreher's, what he's, how he assesses the situation.
So things have to get worse before they're going to get better is kind of what you're saying.
Maybe, or at least some people have to perceive them as it's actually not as good as it seems to you right now.
Well, yeah. Well, I guess that brings up a question of, you know, we started off talking about Rod Dreher's assessment of things. And I guess the question is it really that bad? Have we gotten to the point where, you know, America has abandoned its Christian identity so much and to such an extent that we truly are strangers in a strange land, as Archbishop Chaput said? Mm-hmm. Or is this kind of an exaggeration and a little bit alarmist?
Mm. Well, back to the idea about people would like to form deeper communal relationships, that's still an issue. Is there, I mean, maybe we don't need to start a new school or a new project. And that's kind of, we've been talking about that, more activities. Mm-hmm. Is that the solution? So here's the other thing that came up in this conversation I had recently, which is not starting any activity at all. It's doing your activities in a different way. So the kind of people who volunteer at the parish, they want to be involved in the parish. But so often when we are running Vacation Bible School or a retreat, we are really invested in all the aspects of making that come off in a really coordinated, organized, glossy way, these really good box lunches from such and such a place and a craft at every hour for the children. And she was thinking, you know, she and I were talking about, what if you just didn't do as much in your activities and you didn't have such high expectations of how they have to come off? You know, we're not wedding coordinators or whatever. What if we treat it as an opportunity to build relationships, not as the most important formative experience of your life?
Well, do you know what would happen, Dr. Adams, if you did that? Your parish would have great advertising on Pinterest. all of the Pinterest fails and all these crafts that went wrong.
Which then that might be a new way to build community.
Exactly.
Well, it seems to me that the that some of the solutions that you're bringing up, Dr. Adams, you know, it's not that they have to be tried in every parish lockstep, right? They're in any city. So here in Indianapolis, for example, and the surrounding area, mm-hmm. there are some parishes that are very vibrant and mm-hmm. thriving. Where, to Mark's point, yeah, you bring in another program that seems like an add-on, and it's too much. But there are plenty also, especially inner city parishes, mm-hmm. not just in Indianapolis, but I think generally around the country, that are really dying on the vine. And those could be the kind of settings where they're at that kind of fork in the road on what to do. You just hear about the number of parish closings. Whether it's Chicago or Boston or mm-hmm. New York, and they're closing them by the hundreds.
Yeah.
And so what do we do to turn that around? Because I am, based on some of my reading, I am pretty pessimistic about where the statistics are pointing in mm-hmm. terms of Catholicism in the West. I mean, it just, you brought up the nuns, the N-O-N-E-S. The demographic is
Catholics have to always spell that out.
Right.
I'm not talking about religious sisters.
Right.
Okay.
Yeah. So. Yeah. Those who have no faith,
right.
You know, per se. And those statistics are very alarming, I think. And I think there's a multitude of reasons. For me, the area I've been most interested in or trying to pay the most attention to is really family breakdown. It seems like Mary Aberstedt, in one of her books, she really mm-hmm. pointed out, I thought effectively, that the reason why it's been so difficult to transmit the faith is because of family breakdown.
Right, exactly. The families are the instrument that the faith gets passed along. You know, the faith is really a habitual action. And I think in today's day and age, where everything is so cerebral, everything is so based on learning, that we've gotten in some ways overboard with the idea that you can learn the faith, rather than habitually practice the faith. And you know, the you brought up Sherry Waddell's book, Intentional Discipleship, etc.
Yes.
You know, I think there's some moves to bring it back, but ultimately that has to happen within a family. Within a family context. I think you're exactly right, Tim. As the family breaks down, those instruments to carry the faith forward have broken down over time, and that's really where we're seeing the drop off.
Well, and I think we've in working with college age students or in up to and including around 25 years old, what I'm noticing is they have almost no confidence, generally speaking, no confidence that family life is even possible. In other words, they have very, very little confidence that one could get married,
right?
Much less stay married.
Yeah, David and Amber Lapp are doing a lot of research on interviewing.
There's lots of reasons why that is. I mean, there's a lot of social science coming out. There's a great Catholic sociologist that I've just started bringing. I believe his first name is Mark and last name is Regnerus.
And you're going to say Tuttle. Okay.
Yeah, no. And I actually think it's Mark with a K, one I'm thinking of, instead of Mark Tuttle with a C. And he has this book out, and it's called Cheap Sex, which is a provocative title, right? Yeah. And one of the things, and you can YouTube his presentation on this. He has a wonderful one where he gave a talk at Franciscan University recently on this phenomenon. But part of what he's pointing at is that there's a kind of competition now, in the ability for men and women to find suitable mates that wasn't there before, such as the availability of cheap sex, pornography, on and on. You can list the social ills that are making these relationships, when it comes to finding a suitable and ideally permanent mate, very difficult. Well, with that, hold on just a sec, because we're going to wrap up this segment now, but we're going to come back one more final segment. You're listening to The Catholic Cave here with Dr. Gwen Adams on Catholic Radio Indy.
You're listening to Catholic Radio Indy, converting the culture to Christ through radio, featuring 100% Catholic programming 24/7. Do your friends a favor. Tell them about Catholic Radio Indy.
Have you ever thought about joining the Catholic Church? Have you just wanted to explore the Catholic faith? All you need to do is call your local Catholic Church for more information. We are always happy to help you in your journey to discover and learn more about the Catholic faith. We have classes that are almost year-round, and the classes and information sessions do not involve making a commitment, and there is no pressure to join. Please call your local Catholic parish for more information today and start the journey of one day possibly becoming Catholic as well. God bless.
Had enough cold weather and snow? Well, put winter behind you. Sign up now for the Catholic Radio Indy Annual Golf Outing. It's coming up on Tuesday, May 22nd at the Plum Creek Golf Club in Carmel. It's a great day, beginning with Mass at 11 a.m., followed by lunch, golf, prizes, and a great dinner. The gold-level underwriter for this event is Marion Financial Partners. Holy Rosary Parish is our Silver Plus underwriter, and Thurston Springer Financial is our Silver-level underwriter. There'll be an all-American grill buffet for lunch and delicious chicken and barbecue ribs for dinner. Plus, at the dinner, Chris Ballard, general manager of the Colts, will let you know all about the upcoming season. There's plenty of room for foursomes and for individual golfers. Foursomes are $450, individual golfers $125. Plus, there's opportunities for sponsorships as well. All proceeds benefit Catholic Radio Indy. To sign up, visit catholicradioindy.org or call us at 317-870-8400.
Welcome back to the Catholic Cave. I'm still Timothy O'Donnell in the cave, my fellow cave dweller, Mark Tuttle, and our special guest, Dr. Gwen Adams. We've been talking about communities, Catholic communities, thick Catholic communities, and right before the break, I kind of brought us back to the dark side of what some of the challenges were. But I know you've got a book coming out, Dr. Adams, in the fall. And you have put your finger on, I think, some important findings about how we might build Catholic communities. So tell us a little bit about, where do we begin? What might be what might we do? Because my inclination is to start activities, but I don't think that's what we should be doing.
As we were talking, I realized that my book sounds a lot like 10 things you should start at your parish.
And, immediately.
And exactly.
And go right to your priest.
Right, exactly.
Because he's got all the free time.
Like Mark was saying, I can just imagine people handing a copy of my book to their parish priest and him saying, are you kidding me? We are so busy already. And so I've got to remember to draw out the idea that that all of the people whose story I'm telling come to realize is that it's not doing activities that builds culture or builds community. It's following the call from God. Everything that they did was really it was really rooted in prayer. So they didn't read Rodrigue and say, I need to build community, so what should we do? They all had very deep relationships with Christ, sort of very interactive conversations with him. And that might really be where we need to start. Not trying to make a to-do list, but to sort of remember, I guess, like that hymn for Holy Thursday, Ubi Caritas, where there is God, there is love. If we want relationships, then the first thing is the relationship with God. And you were saying, Mark, right during the break, sort of a lot of communities that work actually have come right out of more prayer-based movements, adoration.
Right, yeah. And I think that sacramental life of the parish, to a good extent, as you were saying, you know, you're hoping people don't run to your priest with, you know, oh, here's more activities we need to do, Father. I think as more people have done that, it has led to a kind of a diminished emphasis on the sacramental nature of the church and the sacraments that are there at the church. Where, you know, when you think of communal life, what comes to mind? Well, baptisms, weddings, you know, bringing the community together to celebrate the sacraments. And I think, you know, that has in a lot of ways gotten given second shift for all of the ministries and all of the outreach and all of the other things that we're trying to do to build community rather than trying to center our parish life around sacraments.
I also think building off the sacramental life of the church is, I also think there's a tremendous role for the devotionals. So bringing people together for and creating opportunities for the rosary, that we have some, again, this is going to sound like activities, but things that will draw us deeper, like on Divine Mercy Sunday. It's just beautiful when a parish offers on Divine Mercy Sunday, you know, to bring out an image of our Lord, and then before the tabernacle, pray the Divine Mercy Chaplet together as a parish, so that we're present, as you pointed out, Dr. M, to the Lord, so that he can, so that we can hear him when he speaks to our hearts, so that we know what he wants us to do. And that's the key, is our Lord will lead us if only we allow him.
And maybe that's been caricatured as private prayer and individual and self-focused. But I think maybe Pope Benedict was trying to help us remember that actually there is no disconnect between prayer and the interior life and social justice. That's what he's trying to do in his encyclicals like Deus Caritas Est. We're loving other people because God loved us first. But if we don't have that experience, then you don't have the second part. The loving other people doesn't really happen. It's actually just a lot of busyness.
Right. And I think, too, when I wanted to ask you, because we're in our last segment here, I want to kind of turn back around a little bit, Dr. Adams. You know, with your, you know, for listeners out there to the show, we've been talking about building, you know, thick Catholic communities. In some of the research that you've done for your upcoming book, What have you found? What sort of do you have an insight or something that maybe you begin to put your finger on as one of those aha moments where you're like, I can see a special kind of genius in how the Lord is working through this parish life or this particular ministry or this particular movement?
Yes. And this has been a surprising one because it helps me realize how important it is to have the whole activity rooted in a prior relationship with God, one where you can talk to him all the time, because almost all of the people have stories, critical moments in starting these ministries where they have to take a step which they think is just crazy. They have to go and talk to somebody. They have to ask for a favor. They
looks
have to,
impossible.
They have to start and stupid, and they feel really dumb when they're and so they relate sort of having this really casual, slangy conversation with God. God, what? Wait, whoa! What are you talking about? And I think, how long does a person have to talk to God to be able to be that comfortable with him, where they can talk about how weird this looks and still sort of take the gamble, make a risk, and do something which seems really foolish, but is the linchpin for this ministry that they're starting?
Yeah, so, and you know, so many of, like, even the monumental great things that the church has done, those stories start that way. Mm-hmm. You think Mother Teresa's story of going to the poorest of the poor in Calcutta, that story starts that way.
Mm-hmm.
The founding of EWTN, that story starts that way.
Yeah.
Even
I go back to Moses, right? Moses goes,
right,
Lord, are you sure? Because I really am not the greatest speaker.
Right,
exactly.
I think I always thought that when people pray, they have this sort of dear God, what is thy will?
And English accent.
I know.
They always have an English accent, yeah. Yes.
And hearing these people relate their personal prayer lives, sort of like, wait, God, no, you got to be kidding me. No way. And I think, wow, this is normal life for them to talk to God this way. And I think that's one of the biggest lessons I'm learning about, if you're going to sort of follow in Roger's footsteps and think about this community building idea, that's the roots. So,
well, what exactly, we've kind of danced around the big question. What does a thick Catholic community look like? I mean, if you had to define what a thick Catholic community is, what are the features? What are the characteristics? What are the necessary parts to make a thick Catholic community?
Well, I guess I could draw on some of the things from my dissertation research, because I studied parish relationships, and a lot of what people brought out was a deep sense of identity and belonging to the parish, being able to ask for help or know that you could receive help in really difficult times, even if we were embarrassed to ask for help. And I think that's probably one of the hardest things for people, to take help.
And I've been thinking about that for a long time, to be perfectly honest. And it goes back to some of the works by Bill Kavanaugh, who's he writes on more social justice and socioeconomic kind of types of issues. But he points out that when St. Lawrence was asked by the Roman magistrate to bring the riches of the church to him, he went and brought the poorest of the poor, and he said, these are the riches of the church. But that's not the attitude we have towards service to the poor these days. The poor now are somebody outside the church. So, the poor don't belong to the church. The mm-hmm. people we serve don't belong to the church. The people that all our ministries are directed towards don't belong to the church. They're not we. And I think that there's sort of a two-way door there. On the one mm-hmm. hand, yeah, we haven't incorporated them into parish life, and so we haven't gone out and tried to draw them into our churches. But at the same time, we've also created a barrier to we, as part of the church, don't feel comfortable asking for help.
Right. We don't have needs. Right. We're not poor.
Right. We're the ones that are supposed to be serving. We're not the ones that are supposed to need things.
Right. Yeah.
Well, one example I heard recently that sort of arrested my attention, of an example of at least a very closely knit community. Someone was sharing with me that many Amish communities, they don't purchase homeowners insurance, and the reason why they don't purchase homeowners insurance is that if anything were to happen to your home or your barn or other building that you might have on your property, the community will come over and restore it.
Wow.
So they don't rely on, we rely on Allstate.
Right? I know. I'm always hoping that somebody will start, I haven't heard of anybody doing this, somebody will start some kind of parish-based thing that takes care of healthcare and insurance.
Yeah.
Wouldn't that be amazing to know that you could rely on people you actually see for that?
That's the difference, right? Yeah. The difference is we're not, in terms of a thick Catholic community, maybe that is one of the features, is that there would be new avenues
mm-hmm.
for these personal relationships that moves us from away from, that forms a new kind of also institution, right? There's an institutional quality to what insurance products do, but away from the depersonalized kind of market system that we're currently in now. But we are, gosh, it flew by again. We're almost out of time. Our special guest today has been Dr. Gwen Adams. She was so kind to drive all the way down from Lafayette, Indiana. Yeah.
That's a long drive all the way down from Lafayette.
Especially early in the morning. So thank you so much for being in the Catholic Cave.
Again, really
we're going to have you back as soon as you're new book comes out because Mark and I want free copies.
Yeah.
And we'll discuss it on the show.
You know, that is why we have guests on the show, just so we can get free books.
Signed. No. They're more valuable on eBay.
Yeah, or less. It's hard to know. Don't take the shrink wrap off.
And that is all the time we have for the Catholic Cave today. I'm Kent Blanford for Mark Tuttle, for Timothy O'Donnell, and for our special guest, Dr. Gwen Adams. Have a blessed day. We'll catch you next week.
The Catholic Cave is a production of Catholic Radio Indy. Replays of this program are available in podcast form at catholicradioindy.org. Comments about this program can be addressed to kent@catholicradioindy.org or by calling 317-870-8400.
Did you miss something in this show or just want to hear it again? Podcasts of this and all our other great local programs are available 24/7 at catholicradioindy.org.